Okay, so we're going to start from Perek Bet, Pasuk Chet. So last week, someone asked the question, what's the time frame of all of this? Right? The Megillah gives us very little, like, indication of time, other than it'll tell us, you know, it was the third year of his reign, and then I think she becomes queen in the seventh year of his reign. So we have, like, a little bit of a window, but not all that much. So what's interesting is that at some points, the Megillah is very quick. Right? Like, what would be an example of something that happens very quickly in the Megillah?
Parties.
Goes through his journal, and the next day, poof. Haman walks
right.
In.
From the dream to the end.
Right, so Haman seems to, like, right, very quickly. Okay, what else? Sorry, Surely, what dreams in the end?
No, like the dream that he said, we called in Mordechai to be rewarded. And then it was right through to Haman's demise. Must have been like 4 days, it seems.
Right, like Balaila Hahu, and then there's the party, and then he's killed. It's like within...
Two parties, two days.
No, but the Balaila Hahu is in between the two parties.
Balaila Hahu is in between the two parties. Oh, right.
So it's like Haman goes home from the first party. Yeah, top of the world. Says his wife, like, what am I supposed to do? This Mordechai guy drives me crazy. Don't worry, we'll get to this like in June, maybe. Right? And then, like, what happens? So then all of a sudden he's like, okay, let's kill Mordechai. That very night he goes to Ahasuerus at like 2 a.m. And then by the morning he's walking Mordechai. As soon as he's finished walking Mordechai, he is already like getting pulled to the second party. And before you know it, he's hanged. Right? Like very, very quickly. Vashti is also, she's eliminated very quickly. It's like day 7 of the 7-day party. After 187 days of partying, Vashti come, no, boom, dead, gone, right? So like some things happen very, very, very quickly. And then other things, not so much, right? Like the selection of this girl is something that's long, drawn out, not so clear what the time frame is. It seems like it's taking a long time. So why is it that we have, like, some things happen super quick and some things not so much? So Erica Brown suggests that what the Torah is trying to do, or what the Megillah is trying to do, is highlight the inefficiency of the government here, how certain things just took so, so long and did not work out very well. And I think that that's kind of important, especially in this piece right here, because we just have no idea how long and how much this was going to be.
That's applying a very modern set of thinking to thousands of years ago. Like the notion of efficiency, something that was important in daily life then, like, why would we even suppose that?
If you're ruling such a huge piece of land, you would want to be as efficient as possible, or you won't last long.
Yeah, I don't have any reference point to that, but communications were slower than molasses. Things took forever. That was probably the norm. What is the notion of efficiency back then versus when we hear the word efficiency?
We think instant messaging. As opposed to, like you said, horseback, across the continents.
Okay.
All right. Anyway. No problem. I'm okay if you don't like that. Okay, Pasuk Chet. Vayhi b'Shabbat Dvar HaMelech v'Dato. When they heard the Dvar HaMelech, the word of the king and his law, uvihi kaveitz na'ar. Now remember, we just were introduced to Mordechai and Esther. So when they heard about the laws of this king, uvihi kaveitz na'arot rabot, El Shushan Habira El Yad Hegai, and when they saw and when they heard that they were collecting all these girls in Shushan Habira to Hegai, Batilakach Esther El Beit HaMelech El Yad Hegai Shomer Nashim, and Esther was taken to the house of the king under the rule of Hegai, who is the keeper of the women. Now the word is Batilakach. Normally, how would we say it? So I don't know. It's a good question.
That's a good one. Come on.
So the Ibn Ezra says, "Vatilakach ki nilkacha shelo birtzona v'shelo birtzon Mordechai." That she was taken. It wasn't that she wanted to go, but she was taken against her will.
Question.
Yeah.
Why did the name of the Shomer HaMashim change from the Hegay to
Hegai? It's a great question. Where he was Hegay? Well, Hegay
and Pasagay.
Oh. Well,
he's no longer a Swiss, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. So, I mean, one possibility is he's not the same person. Let's see. I'm looking to see if any of the Mefarshim say anything about it.
His twin brother.
He's still showing me how much. What are the odds?
Yeah, they need like a brother, hey dude. Hey,
and a sister, hey Jew.
So I mean, one of the Mefarshim makes it clear who he's the same person. He doesn't explain why there's a difference in his name, but he says he's the same. I'm out of Mefarshim. I have no one else to comment. How about by you guys?
No,
doesn't make it into Art Scroll or.
Not in my Art Scroll. My Art Scroll doesn't talk about it.
Let's move on.
All right. So Vatitav Hanara Beinav Chesed Lefanav. So this girl found favor in his eyes, but and she found kindness in front of him. So Ralbag says, what happens here, right? Like, why is he so excited by this? So, the Ralbag says that he looked at her, and Hegai, that is, and saw that she was going to be, she was going to win. And so all of a sudden he like favors her. So why does he think that she's going to win? So Ralbag says he named ipnei shechashav Hegai kitia malkal lihiyota yoter yafe be'enav. She was the prettiest girl there in his eyes, and therefore he takes care of her. And that's why he gives her, you'll see at the end of this pasuk, that he changes her place in order to ensure that she has the best shot. Okay, so, Vayivahel et tamrukeha ve'et manoteha, he rushes her tamrukeha, are her, what are they, what the good translation? What do you guys have for that?
Which one?
Tamrukeha and manoteha.
Delicacies, cosmetics and delicacies.
This one says her ointments and her portions.
Okay, all right, so that works, right? So, right, she gets all the cosmetics and all the ointments and everything she needs and the food that she needs. That sheva hanaro taru uyot lateitla. And the seven maids that she is deserving of. Now, of course, you're probably all familiar with the medrash of what? Why did she have seven maids?
One per day, so she keeps Shabbos and no one will know.
Yeah, so that's one possibility, right? But another possibility is that just that's what they gave everybody. And another possibility, which would probably be consistent with what the Ralbag said, was because she was the one that found favor the most in his eyes, he makes sure that she has the best maids, the best stuff, and gets it all quickly. Latetla mibeit hamelech, from the king's house. Vayishaneha vet narotel otov beit hanashim. So Vayishaneha, what does he do? He changes her to be in Latov, in the best place, Beit Hanashim, in the house of the women. So what's going on here? So the Rav Sadigon says that he takes her to the choicest location in the king's palace, and that's gonna work the best for her. Rashi says Rashi says Shinauta, that he gave it to either changed or a second. He gives her a second batch. That's what the footnotes in Rashi say. That after she got the first set of cosmetics, she got another one. So therefore, she has like almost like an unfair advantage over the competition. And the Ibn Ezra says, no, what she got was she got more food, right? She got the best one, more food than everybody else. All right, that's what's going on here. Now, Lohi Gida Esther at Amavet Molata, ki Mordechai Tziva le'asher lo tagid. Now, this is a really hard one to understand. Esther did not tell her nation and her birthplace because Mordechai told her not to. All right, so any...
she omitted or she lied? I'm sure she was asked.
Right, so Rabbi Foreman has this whole thing on it, which I will say when I read it at first, I liked it a lot more, but I don't know, somehow I think there is a little bit more possibly to the story, at least from what I'm currently reading. But it's the idea of Mother Persia, right? He was actually happy that she had no, like, country, because then she could be everyone's queen. So it sort of was like this, like, Ahasuerus was like, hey, where are you from? And she's like, who cares about where I'm from? How are you feeling today? Like, she was the ultimate turning everything to him, which is nice. But yeah, so does that mean that she ignored the question or the question wasn't asked so she didn't have to deal with it? But what other questions are there?
Your parents alive?
Right, it's true. I'm saying, that's true. Those are all good questions. But on the pasuk, what other what question could we ask on this pasuk?
So,
why Amma and Moladata?
All right, it's a good question. So Ibn Ezra says, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to predict that not everybody's going to like this one. But Amma is that she's Jewish, and Moladata is her shevet. Right, like they cared what shevet she's from.
Tziva is a pretty strong word.
Okay.
What about the word aleha? Shouldn't it just be tziva la?
Yeah, it's a good one also.
Why don't you tell us what you're thinking?
No, I like these questions.
But also, you didn't need to repeat the end. Ashelo tagid. Lo yigida Esther, ki Mordechai tziva la. Like you said, he commanded her. You have to repeat again because he told her not to tell her. Tell anyone.
Right. So, those are all good questions. So, I guess the question that bothers me on this is, first of all, I mean, there's obviously the question is like, why does Mordechai care? Right? Like, why does this matter so much to Mordechai? But I think there should be another question. Mordechai, like, checks up on her all the time. Right. And she came from Mordechai's house. So, like,
But she was adopted.
I'm saying, like, they weren't like spies. They were like, hold on one second. We know this girl. She came from there. But even if you don't, like, accept that, let's say they're Midrashim, that she was hidden and whatever, fine. Let's accept that, like, nobody knew that they were connected to each other. It wasn't strange that, like, every day Mordechai goes walking in the garden and it's like, hey, can someone tell me how Esther is doing? Like,
why do you think they were in constant touching? Here, it could very well be that he told her before she got into there, make sure you don't tell anybody, it's not to be like today.
Okay, so sorry. Let's read the next pasuk and then you could comment. B'chol yom ayom Mordechai mitalech lefnei chatzar beit ha'nashim adat eshlom eser ma yaseh ba. Every day, Mordechai would go into the courtyard outside the house of the women to know how Esther was doing and what she was up to. So, like, no, but how is he finding that information?
It's always someone around. She had seven assistants.
And nobody was able to figure it out? That, like, there's this, like, strong Mordechai, Esther.
Those girls had their families who were hoping that they would be picked. So it's not, I don't know what's so unusual about her family wants to know, are you going to win? Are we going to be rich? Are you marrying the king? That's great.
Right. No, that's true. I agree with all that. Then I'm asking, how then could it be that nobody figured out that she was Jewish?
Because Mordechai was an obvious Jew. Clearly, that's the notion. Like, the Jews are walking by asking about this girl, and nobody figured out that they were.
Okay, so let's say that Mordechai was not as Jewish looking as we assume. Meaning, like, he's not like the old, even though he is got to be old if he was, like, you know, in the gullus of Yechonya. But let's assume he's not, like, with his long beard and he looks very rabbinic. But we're not that far off from the next perek when we find out that he refused to bow to Haman. And when he refused to bow to Haman, like, they do a little bit of searching. They're like, oh, he's Jewish. And then when they figure that out, they're like, let's kill all the Jews. Like, there's so many dots here to connect. How does nobody figure it out?
God
made this big top secret
blind
thing?
He made them all blind.
Okay. So that, I guess
government,
that's...
Government inefficiency. I couldn't put the pieces together.
David doesn't believe that there was inefficiency back in...
I believe there was only inefficiency.
Oh, got it. Okay, fine. I apologize. So David will agree that that makes perfect sense. They were the paradigm of inefficiency. Okay. So, you know, you could accept that, like, if you accept it by Foreman, then the answer is sort of like they all look the other way because they don't want to see the connection. That's a possibility. But why... We're going to have to deal with both of these questions. Let's start first with why can't she tell who she is, right? What's the big deal? So it's a machlokas between Rashi and like everyone else. So Rashi says, Asher lo tagid, kidei sheyomru mimishpacha bezu yahi. Mordechai had a plan. The plan was that she would come, and apparently Mordechai was hoping before she even came into the palace, maybe there was some sort of interview process, right? So they brought all the beautiful girls and they're like, all right, who are you from? You know, what's your deal? And she'd be like, I'm Esther. Who are you from? Where are you from? What's your nation? I don't know. And they would assume that she's mimishpacha bzuya, from a very lowly family, vishalchuha, and they would therefore send her off. Because if they knew that she was Jewish, and that she knew that she came from the lineage of Shaul HaMelech, they would for sure take her right away. So Rashi says the hope is that Achashverosh would reject her. She'd be able to go home and she would be able to stay Jewish and live within the Jewish fold. That's Rashi. Okay.
Rashi says Mordechai wants to go back.
Well, not that he wanted her back. He didn't want her to fall into the hands of Achashverosh. Right. And the way to manage that is if people assume that the reason why she's not saying who she's from is because she's from like a lowly family, then she won't even make it into the Beit HaNashim.
And that if she said who she was from, she'd be more desired.
Because she's royalty.
Interesting. I didn't get
that. Okay. So that is Rashi. We'll take a look at the Ibn Ezra, although the Ibn Ezra is fairly similar to the Ralbag and Chachmei Tzarfat. So he says, Yeshomrim ki Mordechai lo asa nechona. Mordechai did wrong, says the Ibn Ezra. Shetziv al Esther shelo tagid ama, ki pachad shelo yikachena ha-melech lisha im yeda shehi mehagola. He thought that she would not be chosen to be the queen if he knew that she was Jewish. So he thought that if they, by letting it known that she is Jewish, that would undermine her ability to be selected to be the queen.
Right, this is the opposite. This is the anti-Semitic view.
I don't know if there's a... So that's a good question. Is there an anti-Semitic piece to it? Maybe.
That's what I was assuming when Mordechai is make sure you don't tell me you are because you are.
Well, I don't know about killing. We can't have
a Jewish queen, so you're...
Right.
So, because of anti-Semitism, may not kill her, but they don't want a Jewish princess. The Jewish queen
knows. Right. Okay, and the Ralbag seems to say the same thing, and Chachmei Tzarfat as well. Now, Rabbeinu Bachaye has a different answer. He says that if she was not known to be Jewish, then she could kind of keep the Torah. She wouldn't have to eat certain foods. And she can keep Shabbos, and nobody would know. But if, right, meaning she could always make an excuse, I'm a vegetarian, I'm not feeling well today, I'm not going out so much. But if they knew that she was Jewish, then the king would force her to do all of those things.
Right,
That's on the notion that she'd not become queen, but she'd be stuck in the harem for her life?
I guess either way. All right, so anybody have a personal preference towards any of the three? Rashi, Ibn Ezra and company, or Rabbeinu Bechaye?
Actually, I thought it was always assumed that Mordechai said don't tell because they'll have an anti-Semitic view. That's all. It would just be bad.
Well, yeah.
Or your Yalukah, you know, in a place which might be interesting.
So if you say that Mordechai wanted her to become queen, and that's why he had to keep everything a secret, then why were they so nervous or against them taking her? You should have encouraged it, that this is going to be the savior, and this is the part of God's plan, because we're in the know, and she should have gone willingly.
Well, we don't...
it's not his plan yet.
Well, we don't really know. The only way that we see that it's against her will is Vatila Kach, meaning it's a very, like, nuanced reading of the Pasuk.
No, is it later when she says, you've been picked for this, you got to stay and do it.
Well, that's right. Meaning that's where he says to her, like, this could be the reason why you were placed here.
Right.
Yeah.
For now, there's no indication that he wants her to win it.
Right.
So then why keep it a secret if you feel it's going to be detrimental to you?
Because I think the anti-Semitism, again, I don't have any proof for this, but I would just think notionally, Jews don't usually go around saying, we're Jewish, so we want to be in a really big, important place in the government.
Right. It doesn't usually...
Jews also tend to live in ghettos and Jewish communities.
So she was plucked
and
out.
They would have taken her out of a Jewish house with the mezuzah and all that other fun stuff on it.
So that's what happened. But because they're inefficient. How did they not know? Because they're inefficient.
Right.
They didn't mark it off.
They lost the report. They lost the report.
That's right.
Right. I think that question is a harder one to deal with. Like, how did they not see the Mordechai-Esther connection and figure out that she's Jewish? But okay. So the Ibn Ezra also quotes the Esther Rabbah. Not the Esther Rabbah. The Esther Rabbah, I apologize. That says, Ki bederech nevuah ubechalom yadash atavot shua yidal Yisrael. He knew that either through nevuah or through a dream, that the Jewish people would be saved through Esther. Meaning something bad would happen to the Jews, and Esther would save them. Now, it's not so crazy to assume that something bad would happen to the Jews, because that was usually, like, par for the course. So, if somehow she got chosen to be the queen, he kind of had a feeling that there is a reason why she's being placed in that position, and therefore, keep your Judaism quiet for now.
That's the anti-Semite.
Yeah, no, I think that the anti-Semite answer is a definitely strong one. I find that Rashi's answer, I don't buy it so much. Meaning, like, they're gonna be like, oh, wow, we've got Shaul's great 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 granddaughter, bring her in. Like, I mean, he was just married to like Belshazzar's daughter, like. That's real royalty. Shaul, like the one-time king of the Jews. I mean,
hundreds of years ago.
Right, he's like a has-been. And like a really long time. Even like the Jews would consider Shaul a has-been. Like Belshazzar, at least people would be like, oh, remember Belshazzar was Nebuchadnezzar's son, grandson, whatever. Like we're talking about like, that's big stuff.
And not only
that. Right. So yeah, I don't know. Rashi doesn't really work so well for me. But again, how do we understand the fact that like somehow he was able to avoid detection, right? How did Mordechai pull that off? So it seems like the consensus of many of the Mefarshim is that Mordechai was already a pretty prominent person prior to this happening. So before Esther even went into the palace, Mordechai had access. He was a judge, and he had access to being in that area, the chatzar, right in the courtyard. So once he already had access like that, it wasn't such a big deal for him to have like information at his disposal. And that kind of changes it a little bit, because if Mordechai was like a big shot person in the court of the king, then he has a lot of connections. So it's not just he's asking one person every day and then it's going to like raise suspicions, but he could ask today this guy, tomorrow that person. he's able to quietly and discreetly do it in order to see what's going on.
Maybe he was just asking about all the candidates, knowing that she was one of them, and that was his cover story.
Right, that could be, and it's not telling us that because nobody else matters to the story other than Esther. I like that. Didn't see anyone that said that, but there's no reason why that can't work.
He uses unusual language to describe how he's walking there. It says mitalech and not holech.
Okay.
I'm not sure why it's saying it that way. Maybe he's walking in a particular way that is less blatant, or maybe that's just, that was part of his walk.
It could be.
Or it's secrecy. It's secrecy, like, yeah, you know, he's like a spy walk, you know, like, right. He's like eavesdropping as opposed to walking with a purpose.
Well, that one goes against the notion that he is a prominent guy and he could be there.
No, he's a prominent guy, he has access. But he, you know, it's not like he's throwing a rock at Esther's window and Esther's coming to the window and going like, hey, everything's good, how are you doing? You know,
right, she's like, two thumbs up.
Right, two thumbs up, right. Or, you know, it could be just he's got his ear to the ground and, you know, hearing and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm happy that you brought that up, Mati, because not that I know what the difference really between mitalech and halach is, like, that will never be my strong suit. But when you brought that up, I did a quick scan of the page to see what mitalech means and if there's anything on it. So the footnotes happen to be in the Torah Chaim Chumash and Megillah also are, like, fantastic. And this is what he says. I guess he was walking around the Shomea al Shloma mi Pia Mishartim. Meaning, it wasn't that every day he went and asked, but mitaleich, he would walk around the Chatzar Lada'at, to hear and to know how Esther was doing. How did he do that? Meaning, like, in our days, like, he was listening for the hak. Right? Like, by just being there and walking around, like, he heard nuggets of information. Like, oh, hey, guy's got, like, you know, 2-to-1 odds on her. She is, like, the top, you know, the favorite choice in his book to be the one that's chosen. And it makes sense because Haggai is going to work all the strings out in so many different ways to put Esther in the best possible place. So I love that. And I think that is spot on. One second, there was another footnote. Yeah, okay, fine. So, pasuk yud bet. Uvehagia tor nara venara lavola melech achashverosh miketz hayot lakadat anashim shem asar chodesh kichen yimlu yimeimru. Okay, I'm shisha chadashim shem anamor v'shisha chadashim b'samim tamru kehen hashim. And when it was each girl's turn to come, and she had gone through the whole process, the 12 months, because that was the law on the books that she had to go in the spices for 12 months. Why does it have to tell us this pasuk? Again, we know this, right? We learned this back in... what is it? Gimel? Right, then we have that already. Was this the first mention of it, or?
No. In the way in the beginning. With the plan.
So I'm just double checking. It's hard to remember, because last week at the Chabura, we actually jumped ahead. So we're told that...
Well, the Pasuk Gimel, Perek Bey's Pasuk Gimel...
Right.
It just says that they're going to sit there. It doesn't say 6 months and 6 months.
Okay, so this actually is the very first time that we're seeing it. We just saw it last week at the Chabura. Okay, fine. But again, this should highlight to us, like, the craziness of this empire. Although we did suggest last time the generosity of Achashverosh perhaps through this. And I put that out in the Chabura. It was not... totally well received. My sister sent me like a scathing message on Motzei Shabbos. She's like, I don't buy that at all. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna agree with you that you could definitely make a strong point that, like, that's not a good fair reading. Uvazan Rabala Melech Ekolasher Tomar Yinatein lavoima mi beit hanashim. Now, this is a really, really fascinating thing that happens. When the girl comes into the king's palace, whatever she asked for, she got. So Rashi says, kol minei zemer v'schok. Meaning, like, if she came in and said, I need, like, you know, a violinist as, like, the night goes on. I need, like, a five-man band. Like, whatever she wants. And schok, right? Toys or what, anything for merriment that she wanted for her pleasure would be there. And there was no questions about that at all. She would get lavoimah mi beit hanashim ad beit hamelech. She would get as she was going from the beit hanashim ad beit hamelech, from the women's house to the king's house. Now, Erica Brown has a great point. Now, I just have to say one thing. This is just a side point. Anytime I quote her, it's generally somewhere else from her book, but it's just too hard to keep track of, like, the many, many sources. I think her bibliography in the back is like 15, 20 pages long. So, like, it's a general one, unless it's like one of the Mefarshim that we're familiar with. But she says that here's like the big problem that we have to like figure out. Like, these girls are essentially raped, right? Meaning, like, maybe on some level, right, there's like they consent, but they don't really want to be there. They're taken forcefully into the king's palace. They're going to be kept there for the rest of their lives. And, like, they're going in there with the hope that maybe they'll do things right and they'll get out of it. How does a king, like, deal with that? So she says that the king basically said to them, when you come into my room, right, anything you want to bring is yours to keep. So if they accept the gifts from the king, then essentially what are they doing?
Kedushin.
Right. So
willingness into the position, yeah.
So
it's prostitution,
though. Okay, but even prostitution is still better than rape. Meaning the king feels.
Sure.
Yeah, the king feels.
I didn't hear you say that.
The king feels better about himself this way, but that doesn't matter. We don't care about those girls. I know it's gonna sound terrible. I don't mean we don't care about those girls, but we don't care about the conduct of those girls. The fact that they take it or don't take it is not a judgment on them. But what I think we have to do is we have to read that pasuk, hold it in the back of our mind until we get to Tet Vav. Because by Erev hi ba'av, v'boker hi shav al beit hanashim, sheni, al yad shashkaz, sris hamelach, shomer apilag shim. So they go from one house to the other. They start in the beit hanashim. Technically in the beit hanashim, right, you could leave the Beit HaNashim, maybe in theory, and go home because you were never, like, real property of the king. But after the night with the king, so they went to Shashgaz, and they were in the harem of the king, they're never leaving there. Lo tavod od el melech im chafetz b'hamelech v'nikra abashem. The only way that girl would come back is if the king remembered her and called her by name. What are the chances? Probably small. So that's where the girls are. But now, Pasuk Tedvav, Uviagia Tor Esther bat Avichayil dod Mordechai, when Esther, the daughter of Avichayil, the niece of Mordechai came, Asher lak...
Say,
I know, because it just sounds so... Well, her father's name. It just sounds so much better. I love, like, it's one of the best psukim, like, you know, laning wise, Uve Hagia Torah there. It's probably the Vilna Gaon, because usually these Divrei Torah are the Vilna Gaon, but if not, it's someone similar to that. The trap is, I mean, even just laning it, it's purposeful. Uve Hagia Torah. Why is it breaking it up that way? Because she's coming, it's Munach. Like, right? She doesn't want to go, right? There is like that, the trepidation. And the she's not interested in going. Asher lakach lo lebat lavo al melech lo biksha. This is so important. Lo biksha davar. She didn't take anything. When they said, "What do you want? We'll give you mine schok, mine zemer, anything you want, any clothing." What's her answer? I won't take anything. Because if I take something, then I agree that this is okay. But if I don't take anything, then this is still against my will. And then what happens? He made Asher Yomar Hegai Sris Amelach Shomer Nashim. She only took what Hegai offered her. Now, Rabbi.
Oh, then that's something.
No, meaning whatever.
It's at the same episode. I mean, first of all, the way Archibald translates it definitely a little differently, which is more in line with the way I was going with it. It said that she requested nothing except that which Hegai, the king's chamberlain, guard the woman, had advised, which means he told her what to ask for. She asked for something, she got it. So the theory of she didn't get anything, and therefore it falls into the category of rape as opposed to betrothal, doesn't apply.
No, so I mean, the way I understood it is like this. She had to spend 12 months and all that stuff, right? So all the other, there are girls that had their own ideas, right? They're like, I don't know. I think the king likes this. I think the king really likes this. And Hegai was like, okay, I know the king doesn't, but I'll put you there in July and you'll let me know how it goes, right? It's not going to work out well. You'll smell bad and, you know, you have no shot. She was like, I'm not taking anything. So if you give it to her, she knew she had to go into the spices for the 6 months and 6 months. But it was like, whatever you give me, I'll do because I have no choice.
But that's not the place. This is talking about the night that you're heading into the thing.
But
you offer to get whatever you want, and she's turning it down. And on the same clause, it says she didn't request anything except for that which Hank, I told her to request.
Yeah, it just...
It doesn't say what he told her to request. It says, except for what he told her. That might be that there were minimum standards. He was one of the king's chamberlains. He's not going to let her go in looking terrible, because the king's going to be like, what are you bringing me here?
Right, the king's going to kill... Right, the king's going to kill Hegai.
You may not want all the pomp and circumstance, but you got to look a certain way. So we're going to dress you. You're going to look royal. And she said, okay, whatever I have to do, I have to do.
Right, I think that's...
I'm not arguing, but she got something, then it falls into the category of betrothal and not, or prostitution and not rape.
No, not if he's like, listen, honey, you can't go naked, wear this dress. And she's like, all right. And, you know, honey, like, the king needs something. Like, you can't go in empty-handed. Take this. She's like, all right. Like, all of it's, like, just shoved into her hand, and she's acted upon rather than doing the acting. I happen to like Rabbi Foreman on this one, which I know I've shared in the past, but just because we're up to it, I would say, like, Rabbi Foreman basically says, like, that's the godless of Esther, where Esther, because the pasuk ends at, Esther no seit chen ba'enei kol ro'eha, right? She finds favor in the eyes of everyone that sees her. How does she do that? It's because she listens, and she, like, this is a harem full of, like, little girls. Right, 12-year-old girls are catty and annoying and whatever, and they're all, you know, obnoxious and whatever. And hey, guys, like, there's this one girl who, like, actually, like, has what to, like, work with. She'll do anything I say. And maybe even from Achashverosh's end, all the other girls come in and they're trying to sell themselves, and Esther just sits back and, like, whatever. It makes it easier for her to be likable. Comes in the middle of the winter. It's the coldest and coldest nights, longest nights. So that's good for her on both ends. She's taken. So Rabbi Grossman points out, this is not a Cinderella story. She's taken twice. She's taken from Mordechai, and then she's taken to Achashverosh. We see, like, she's torn away from what was going to be her future to a new future that really doesn't have a happy ending. So that's amazing. The king loves her. But that was never what they were hoping for. If you flip back to Pasuk Aleph, right, what were they aiming for? Or Pasuk Bet? Is it Pasuk Bet? Well, No, Pasuk Dalid, right? What do they need? You're looking for someone who is good in the eyes of the king. And yet, what do they get? That was what they were hoping for, and yet they got Vayahava Melech Esther. The king loves Esther, Mikol Anashim. He actually does fall in love with her. That's much more than they had hoped for. Tisachem v'chesel v'fanav mikol ha'betulot, Vayasem keter malchut v'rosha v'yimlichat tachat vashti. So he... Interesting, he loved her from all the wives. And then he found she found favor in his eyes, Mikala Betulot. Why is it Nashim and then Betulot? So Ibn Ezra says, Mikala Nashim, Hagvirot Sheyula. All the women that were in his lives, right? All of his wives, including Vashti, he loved her the most. And then Mikala Betulot, she was the one that won from all of the young girls that had been brought to him. They put the crown on her head, and she is appointed queen instead of Vashti. There is a meforish, Rav Mem Chalio. I have no idea what that is. Says the whole purpose of this story is, why do we need this now? We need to know that before anything happened. By the way, in case you're wondering, that's Rav Moshe Rav Yitzchak Michalio. He lived a really, really long time ago. So he says that the purpose was to let us know that before the Jewish people are at the are in Haman's potential death camps, they're already, watch out, they're the seeds of Geula are already there. Okay, so then I guess we could say they got more than they bargained for. They were going for a very different emotion. They were going for lust, and he went for love. And there is a huge difference. So Vayasa Melech Mishteh Gadol L'chol Sarav
V'Adav. We also now have a timeline, because now we're in the seventh year. You kind of went through that real fast. Because we were talking about the timeline. So the year 3, they killed Vashti somewhere between 3 and 4, and here we are in year 7.
Yeah, so it took 4 years to get to her.
Or 3.5, but yeah. Well, I mean, it took everybody at least 1 year to get started.
Right, okay, so yeah, that means that there were 1,000 girls before she came onto the scene. He makes a big party in honor of Esther. There is a tax breaks for all the nations. And they give maseit is presents by the king. So why are they doing all this? So one possibility is they want to find out who Rashi says. They want to find out where she's from. So if they give all these gifts, someone will be like, oh, she's from our, they'll take credit for her and he'll figure out what the deal is with her. Another possibility is that this is, once again, the generosity of the king. I think that actually, I mean, I have a simplistic answer, but I think it's actually not bad. This is how you make her love. You want her to be loved by all the subjects. Right? So, there's a lot of ways to make her loved by all the subjects. You know, nowadays, you would look at, the British, family is, our royalty that we deal with. Somehow we fall in love with these people and their personalities. And when their weddings happen, the whole world stops to watch. And when they have kids, the whole world stops to watch. But back... Oh, I didn't say they're good people, but the world shut down to watch Princess Di's wedding, and probably funeral too. When her kids got married, the same thing. Good people, not good people, but that's a big part of it. But back then, there was no real opportunity to love the king, to get to know her that way. But if all of a sudden there is Esther gifts that come to all the provinces and the regions of the king, Esther becomes beloved. A very simple answer is that They just gave the day off for the day of the wedding. I think it's the Ralbag's answer. And that works too. Okay, last pasuk we're going to do tonight. We'll do two more psukim, but we're not really, I don't have much to add on pasuk chaf. We'll be kabeitz betulo chenit Mordechai Yoshe b'shar HaMelech. Einaser magedet molotavet amak asher tziva aleha Mordechai vet mamar Mordechai Esther Osaka asher hayta b'amnaito. I purposely ran through them. I do know the translations of these psukim. That wasn't my goal. But those two psukim, main idea. Right, what would you tell me the main idea of these psukim are?
She's still following the directions of Mordechai.
Yeah. Anybody have anything other than that? I mean, I think that's like spot on, Henry. There is three words, though, that are like inserted at the beginning of Yud Tet that have nothing to do with that. Mordechai is Yoshe B'Shar HaMelech, right? Esther listened to him, just as had been. She's loyal to Mordechai, not Achashverosh. What do we do with Uvhi Kaveitz Betulo Chenit? Why was there a second group of girls?
In case he found out where she's from.
And then?
And then you know, anti-Semitism picture comes up and he decides to get rid of her.
Okay. So, okay, good. So, I don't know about the anti-Semitic piece.
Or to protect at least from anybody finding out where she's from. Right? There's another group coming in. What if this will change his mind and he'll want to replace her or whatever, for whatever reason.
Okay, good. So, other than the anti-Semitic piece, that's exactly what Chachmei Tzarfat say. They say that basically, he was like, I don't know who this girl is. She has like this weird family like tree. Nobody knows who they are. So I need to keep like out there and see like maybe there's another possible girl who's better. And let's call it how it is. If it doesn't work out with her because she's, you know, the wrong queen, I'll already be in the process of finding another queen. That's one possibility.
Even though he loves her more than all of his wives and all of them who love
Yeah, so that's where the Ibn Ezra comes in. The Ibn Ezra, like, likes, well, not likes, but is probably bothered by your point, David, and says it's grim. What it's really saying here is that this was the second choosing of a queen. Uvikaveitz petulot shenit. All of this happened when the second round of girls was chosen, and that's how Esther was chosen. When was the first round of girls?
Vashti.
So that's how the Ibn Ezra reads it.
A royal marriage? I don't know that she would have been chosen in any sort of format.
Meaning he had his first chance to find girls. That was Vashti. And now he has a second one. Erica Brown has three different answers. One answer is, it's really supposed to tell us and like tip us off, like, we miss this. Most people don't notice that there's a second group of girls chosen. And even if we do notice it, it goes so quickly that we miss it. But what we're supposed to realize is Achashverosh was a pretty depraved person, that he just slept with 1,000 girls, right? Because it took 3 years or so to get there, right? And then he doesn't stop. So that's one answer. Another answer is it's a subtle warning to Esther. Right, one wrong move, and you could be replaced too. And then the last answer is that it's not just that he's a disgusting person, but it's just absolute lust. He found his love of his life, but he's going to continue to feed the lust of his life. That's another answer. I personally like the fourth answer the most. I think that it is a warning to Esther. Because Esther's fear is going to be seen throughout the Megillah. When she has to go in front of Mordechai, not Mordechai, in front of Achashverosh, it is with fear. She says to Mordechai, I haven't been called in 30 days. I could be killed. And remember, this is the girl that he loved. Imagine that. So that is where we are up to, and that is where we'll hold up. Next time, we'll come back and take a look at the whole thing with Bigtan and Teresh, Bishar HaMelech, and what happens there.